Good morning. Welcome to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The charismatic equal rights champion Julian Bond died 10 days ago. He was 75. He served 2 decades in the Georgia legislature. He taught history for 2 decades at the University of Virginia, but he was connected to Maryland also through the dozen years he served as chair of the NAACP, headquartered here in Baltimore. All that came after the demonstrations and sit-ins of the 1960s, when Bond became a national figure as a founder of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC. One admirer wrote last week, "SNCC was the Black Lives Matter movement before there were hashtags." I spoke with Julian Bond when he was in Baltimore in April 2010. I asked him how SNCC had started 50 years earlier.
50 years ago next week, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. King's Civil Rights Organization, sent out a letter signed by Martin Luther King and a remarkable woman named Ella Baker, summoning college students who had been engaged in sit-in demonstrations to a meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we met there 50 years ago.
You were in college?
I was in college.
Where?
And at Morehouse College in Atlanta, and about 200 of us met in Raleigh 50 years ago and founded an organization called the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And it became, for its time, it lasted about 10 years, for its time, the most aggressive, the most militant of all of the civil rights organizations, and in a relatively short period of time, had risen to the ranks of consideration, as was true by the NAACP, the SCLC, the Congress for Racial Equality, the Urban League. These were viewed as peers and equal organizations by this organization composed primarily of college students. And we're having an anniversary celebration in Raleigh next week.
The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and you say it was the most aggressive, the most militant. For people who weren't around then, put those two sets of adjectives together.
Well, to be militant didn't mean to be violent. You can be militant without being violent. And we were in a nonviolent movement. And we'd learned about nonviolent from Dr. King and his lessons he taught during the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955 and 56. So we practiced nonviolence at sit-in demonstrations in 1960, at the Freedom Rides in 1961, and in almost all of our work from that day until the organization deteriorated at the end of the decade. But aggressive because we dared to do what other organizations would not do. When we were told we can't work in Mississippi, you have to attack it from the outside, we said, no, we're going right to the heart of the beast. And we went to the heart of the beast and we broke the back of segregation in Mississippi. We opened the polling places to black people. We helped to create the movement in Selma that Dr. King finished with the historic march from Selma to Montgomery that resulted in Congress passing the Voting Rights Act. So this tiny organization, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, played a major role in American civil rights history. The tragedy is that for most people, they think about the movement as being led by Dr. King and populated by Dr. King entirely. And you're not taking anything away from him. He was a great, great man. To say that other people and other organizations did something too, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee is one of them.
Did you feel you were taking a risk as a college student in organizing a group like that?
I wasn't taking a risk of being expelled from college. I went to a college that valued students taking those kinds of risks. But I dropped out of college. I didn't graduate till 10 years later. I was taking risks with my life. I was in places where I could have been killed. I was in places where I could have been beaten. Fortunately, none of this or anything close to this ever happened to me. But people I work with were killed, were beaten, were put in jail, were treated badly. So yes, risk was all around us.
I have heard you say that you were terrified by the death of Emmett Till. Emmett Till was just a year older than you, right?
Yes, he was. And I thought to myself, if this happens to him, why couldn't it happen to me? Why couldn't something similar happen to me? He had done nothing, and for doing nothing, was kidnapped from his uncle's home, taken into the woods, beaten and shot, and tied to a 75-pound cotton gin fan and dumped into the river. And I thought, he did nothing, I've done nothing, but he's dead, and I could be dead too. So I think for people my age and generation, people who were in their teens in the 1950s, late 1950s, Emmett Till was a warning. But also was a warning that if you didn't do something to correct these awful, awful conditions, they'd continue. It would happen again and again and again. So it was both warning and motivation.
And you said that the teenagers who integrated high school in Little Rock gave you the courage to break through that the terror that you felt about Emmett Till's death. Where did that courage come from?
Well, you know, it really wasn't just the teenagers as it was the young women who were teenagers, because I remember seeing Minnie Jean Brown and Elizabeth Eckford, and I used to know the names of all of them, but I remember seeing these two young girls, and I thought myself as a man, and I thought, if these two girls can do this, then surely I could do it. And luckily, I wasn't tested the same way in 57 or 58 or 59, but 1960 I was, and by 1960 I was ready to meet the test, and I was able to act at least what I thought of in as brave a fashion as these young girls had done.
There's been a great deal of talk nationally recently about whether President Obama should be attending to a black agenda, whether that should be something that he identifies. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thought is that when he attends to the American agenda, he's attending to the black agenda, because we are Americans, and the trials and tribulations we face are similar to those faced by other Americans. I note he's having a meeting with black clergy to talk about this very same subject, and I imagine, although I'm not privy to his thoughts, that he'll make this same argument, that I'm the president of all the people in the country, and I intend to serve as their president, and I'm not going to just represent one group of people. I don't think anybody wants him to represent just one group of people.
What is going on with race relations?
Well, if you look at some measures, infant mortality, median family income, life expectancy, and so on, the gaps between white and black Americans, of course there are other Americans than just white and black, but these gaps between white and black Americans are narrower than they used to be. But they haven't disappeared, they've diminished. And so that's proof to us that there's more work yet to be done. If you look at graduation rates, if you look at median family income, if you look at life expectancy, if you look at wealth accumulation, you still see these enormous gaps, and we've got to close those gaps.
How?
Well, each of them, I think, requires different kinds of situations, but there's one that helps in immeasurable ways, and that's a jobs program. I wish the president had a jobs program to create more jobs for Americans. Now, he may argue that much of what he's doing and to help fix the economy is essentially a jobs program, but I think he needs a program that's just about jobs, just puts Americans back to work. There's so many people out of work, so many people have lost jobs, so many people have come down the economic ladder taking a job that pays less than the one they had before. That's a crucial, crucial problem, and I wish he would give some attention to that.
Julian Bond, in April 2010, just before the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I'm Sheila Cast. This is Maryland Morning on WIPR. In the spring of 2014, Bond was one of the civil rights leaders who lectured in an online course on the subject of citizenship and freedom. It was organized by historian Taylor Branch for the University of Baltimore. Tom Hall spoke with Julian Bond then.
It's been 50 years since the Civil Rights Act, almost 50 years since the Voting Rights Act. You were there at its inception of the movement. What's your take on the status of the movement as we sit here in 2014?
Well, I think it's more robust than most people do. If you look at just one organization, the NAACP, it's had an upsurge in membership. It's had an upsurge in contributions. It's all around the country where NAACP branches exist in almost every big city and many, many small towns and many, many smaller towns. It's thriving. It's doing well. It never does enough. Nobody who fights for civil rights ever does enough, and not enough people are doing enough. But if you look at it in that way, the movement is thriving and happy. But if you look at the things it does and the victories it has, this is a bad time with a conservative Congress that won't re-support the Voting Rights Act or rewrite the Voting Rights Act, or will do it but won't do it in ways that make it whole again. These are not happy times for the civil rights movement.
Has the whole notion of what a civil right is evolved since you were in the movement in the 60s?
It's expanded tremendously, and that's all for the better. Now, during the beginning of the movement, there was a flourish and later a loud noise and demand by women, for example. Now, this was not the first time women had said, "We want our rights." But it was a time when women said, "We want our rights," in a loud voice, and more attention had to be paid to them. And if you look at today, you look at gay and lesbian people, again, gay and lesbian people have been asking for their rights for a long time, but they've been asking for them loudly recently and had success in ways I don't think anyone dreamed would ever occur. So the movement is larger now than it is. There are more people engaged in it. There are more people saying, I need my rights. I need to have the same protections everybody else does, and I want them, and I insist on them, and I'm going to have them do or die.
It's been 60 years since the Brown versus Board of Education decision, and the argument can be made that American schools are as segregated, if not more segregated, than they were in the 60s and 70s. Do you think that that's the case, and do you think that there's any hope that that could be turned around?
I think that is the case, and I think that's what you'd have to say. And I think if you looked at the Civil Rights Movement again, you'd say, boy, the Civil Rights Act is wonderful. It's being enforced. It's doing what it intended to do. Good for that. The Voting Rights Act is under attack by the Supreme Court, under attack by several states, particularly those with Republican governors and Republican legislatures. And so things are not so good there.
Julian Bond, speaking with Tom Hall a year and a half ago. The civil rights icon, past chair of the NAACP, and past president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, died on August 16th after a life fighting for equal rights. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. After the news, Wes Moore looks for a life worth living. Stay with us on 88.1.